Laura, congratulations.
Congrats to you, Kevin.
Your anniversary.
Yes, yeah.
The final day of our pop-up at Emporium.
Yes.
Thank you all for being here. This is a really special interview that we are about to do. But before we introduce our guests, I want to thank Emporium Chicago and the pop-up space, Jorge, and the whole staff here for having us all weekend long. I want to thank Max, who has helped to build out the entire space. I want to thank Don't Fret and Revise and all the artists who helped contribute to the Corner Store pop-up. I want to thank our sponsor for the podcast, Stolen Spirits, who have constantly rocked with us. And also this evening, they have two cocktails at the bar. All proceeds from cocktails this evening go to the Graffiti Institute, which is an organization that continues a mentorship process in graffiti education. So please, please support, drink up responsibly, I will say. And of course, want to thank WGN Radio. Our both of our producers are in the building. DJ Cashera and Ernie are in the house tonight. So thank you, WGN Radio. Who else do we have to thank, Tara? Anybody?
I think that's pretty good.
Okay, good. So we have, we have two of, I think, the most vibrant, productive, prolific, and important artists and graffiti writers on planet Earth at this moment. They have been crushing for a long time and have, I'm excited to get into y'all's story and your story together, which I'm excited to talk about too. So welcome to the Corner Store. Make some noise for Merlot and Amuse 126. Woo. Yeah. Thank you guys for being here. Before we begin, let it be, we have some snacks for you in the Corner Store. Max went wild today. We have, first of all, for both of you, we have Ring Pops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course. We could also leave those over here. We have, I guess it was just Halloween, so we have mini Reese's Pieces packets.
Yep.
That's right. Good. Those are good, right? I also copped a few of those for my pockets.
Yeah, you're being a little greedy, and you don't even like sugar.
I like Reese's. I like peanut butter.
Oh.
Don't introduce them. Just send them down.
Okay. Well,
it's tradition. It's tradition.
Yeah. We also have some Sour Patch watermelon candies for you. These are good. The assorted Swedish fish.
Ooh.
You like those?
Ooh, assorted.
Yeah.
All about it.
I didn't know that you could have those.
And then a whole box of vanilla wafers.
If
you're going to make
so
banana
fire,
pudding,
though?
I know. Yeah.
By themselves.
By themselves, yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're good.
You ever put them in your cereal?
I mean, I feel like that makes sense. I haven't though.
We also have stolen caps and shirts for you as well, so we'll give those to you after. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
I want to remind our audience, or say it for the first time, because of the nature of the work that Amuse and Merlot do. Let's not make social media posts. Let's not record or film this in any way. We're recording for the radio, but please do not use your phone to film in any way. So thank you. Want to begin with just kind of where you guys come from. We'll talk to both of you, and I'm kind of excited to get to the point where your story intersects. But I know, you guys didn't know each other for a long time, so we'll talk about some of that as well. But where do y'all come from?
So I'm originally from Seattle, born and raised, and I've been there my whole life. And I only moved out to Chicago about 3 years ago.
Great. Good choice.
I'm diehard Chicago, born and raised on the north side of the city.
Yeah. Let's talk about, as young people, were you guys drawing, coloring, and what was your artistic notions as kids?
I was always drawing, coloring. I just remember always, like, when I was little, repeatedly drawing Little Mermaid and just fun characters and just having fun with them, with markers and crayons and things like that. And even all throughout middle school and high school, I was drawing, kind of more so getting into lettering, more so doing just bubble letters and things for posters and just being super creative with projects.
And bubble letters because of the interest in fonts and letters, or bubble letters because you've already encountered graffiti at that point?
So I'd already encountered graffiti, but it was more so, I think, just because I saw some cool movie posters and things like that, that I wanted to kind of start doing bubble letters. And it
what
was just
movie
kind of,
posters? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Because there was a slew of, like, you know, incredible and incredibly bad, like, 90s hip-hop films that used fonts and shit like that. I don't know if it was any of
that. It was more so even just, like, regular fonts, just, like, regular 3D-looking kind of stuff that I wanted to try to do some 3D-looking letters on certain things for class, so.
On your Trapper Keeper?
Yeah.
That's an important. That's where you. That's kind of one of the places you first practice, I imagine.
The start of it all,
right? Yeah, Trapper Keeper's notebooks and the like.
So yeah, other. I mean, I feel like I've been drawing forever, not knowing exactly what I wanted to do. But in high school, I met some people that were already into graffiti and doing it pretty actively, and those became some of my best friends that kind of helped show me the way.
How did you meet them or first encounter them?
I think we were all like kind of bad kids in school and we'd get in trouble. And I think somehow we were all just kind of found our way to each other. I used to go to some of the B-boy practices after school just to like hang out just because there were some cool people there. So I met some of them there. Some art classes, there were people, and I would see them drawing letters, and I would be interested that way. So,
well, Seattle, of course, has a great hip-hop community. What is the graffiti community like, and how did they get you to kind of go with them? Like, that sounds potentially ominous, but, like, how did they, like, where did they bring you? What was that, what were those first experiences like that drew you in for a lifetime, I guess?
So where I went to school is about 20 minutes outside of the city. And there were so many artists within the city that I'd already been following on MySpace, and kind of checking out their work and being super excited about doing art. And I would actually communicate with them and have them try to send me stickers and I'd send them back and I would, go down to Seattle and attend some art shows. And so I think there was already this really awesome art graffiti scene in Seattle and that I just really wanted to be a part of. And so I just had to make my way there by getting to know different people.
Great. And for you, how did you begin Muse?
My sister and I were always very artistic together. She had this knack for drawing people and figures, and it seemed redundant for me to try to do the same thing that she was already doing, which made me draw more background stuff and secondary, you know, kind of background imagery.
She's older?
Younger.
Oh, younger, okay.
Younger.
But you gave her the figures.
I gave her one thing.
Did y'all, like, work together or collab?
Yeah, we were close. We kind of had each other as friends, so it definitely started there. And as I got older and a little more deviant at just my exploring and adventuring out of the house more, it kind of just found me. It was definitely...
Well, yeah, if you can break that down a little bit, like how does it find you and who were some of the folks who drew you in initially?
There was like simultaneously a few different things happening. I had a friend in the northern suburbs whose dad introduced it to us. He was tired of us setting fires and blowing things up in their garage and alleyway. So he figured he would introduce us into a little culture, toured us through Pilsen and was explaining the mural work and the history. And at a young age, that was something very cool and inspiring. While simultaneously, I was also exploring more of my own neighborhood. I was never allowed on the train tracks as a kid. And just as that deviant age was coming about, I was exploring that. And graffiti was just everywhere. So seeing the mural work, seeing this, there was just like gears started turning and it just became something that we wanted to write our names on and like kind of be a part of it, not knowing what it was in any way, just figuring it, you know, being kids.
Who, for both of you, you know, local writers in Chicago or Seattle or writers maybe that you began to see as you would explore on the internet, who were some of the artists that, you know, grabbed your attention early on? Maybe folks that you knew or folks that you saw in any capacity?
Those train tracks were huge for me growing up, and I was pretty tucked away far on the north side, so it limited a little bit of what I was seeing, but I was also seeing really amazing artwork from guys like Alotes and Kami. Morgan was painting there. Anyone who I still paint with, you know, these are all guys that are good friends of mine. There was tons of artwork and things that were just so different, and the more I would frequent these spots, the more these spots would start to change, and I realized there was activity there, and there was a purpose to all this. It was not just something that you stumbled upon.
And in Chicago, obviously I don't know Seattle as well, but Chicago, those spots are also, they migrate, which is interesting, right? Some of the spots will remain for a period of time and maybe for a long period of time, but for a variety of reasons, those spots will also move about. So when you were a kid, where were some of those places specifically?
When I was a kid, I was fortunate that the area that I grew up in was very active. There were four or five different factory buildings that were just progressively being painted like crazy. So, and different buildings had different people that would go to them. So I would see just a certain group painting here and a certain group painting there. And it was awesome. It was a great time. Late 90s, early 2000s, there was that railroad track kind of hidden. It was the only way to beat the buff system here. So it was the only way those type of spots could live was more remote.
Right.
I got a lot of influence and want to be in this graffiti scene from this girl named Angel 179. When I was in high school, she was someone that I always looked up to, and I always saw her art, and she was having art shows, and she wrote Angel. And so I loved what she was doing. When I started painting more, there was this crew called DVS, which Sneak and Hughes are in, and just a lot of really great piecers in Seattle. And seeing what people can do outside of just the standard bombing, doing like really amazing clean pieces, inspired me to want to just paint cleaner and paint a little bit more legible. So they definitely inspired me. And what's really cool is Angel, who kind of influenced me at the beginning stages. She's now one of my best friends. We talk all the time. We paint all the time. And she's kind of the reason why I'm where I am.
That's really dope. She's also Seattle-based?
She is. So I have her, and there's this other girl, Hops, who are my two female graffiti artists from Seattle that they both kind of helped shape who I am. We all used to travel the world. We went to Israel together. We've been everywhere together. And we've all just been painting forever, for over 10 years now.
Were you one of the few girls painting when you were in Seattle?
Yeah, there weren't really... the only people I knew were Angel and then some of the girls at Art Primo, which is a graffiti shop out in Seattle. And so I kind of just try to find my in with them. And I actually found Hops on 12 Ounce. I reached out to her because I heard she was another girl in Seattle. She wrote Hands at the time. And as soon as I reached out to her, we started painting forever. And it was kind of like we all the girls kind of got together. But there were only really like five of us.
So when you begin anything, obviously you go through a process of being whack, right? I mean, or a toy. And so when was the point for each of you where you began to garner the confidence or notice that you were actually getting good? When did that transition happen where you were like, oh shit, I'm actually nice?
So for me, I felt like it was actually after Instagram started. So I think once Instagram happened and I started seeing that my artwork was being seen more so outside of Seattle, not just the people in the community, it made me want to push myself even harder to get better faster. And so I was sketching a lot, reaching out to a lot of people, trying to get advice, trying to paint with as many people as I could. And I felt like from there is when I actually felt motivated to just keep pushing myself as an artist.
Yeah, Instagram has really changed graffiti in a lot of ways. I mean, I guess an equivalent is some of the early zines or magazines that used to exist, where you would be able to send pictures of freights or walls or trains around the country, and that was a way for writers to communicate. But now, it's international instantaneously, which is fairly incredible, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, it's good and bad, and the good of it is that it's so easy to network with other artists. Anywhere we travel to, we can find someone to paint with, and it's no longer trying to stalk someone on Flickr or 12 Ounce and trying to figure out if anyone will let us paint with them.
Right. And Amuse, when did you start to know that you were nice with it?
It's never been something that I've been confident with. I just watch my buddies push really hard, and it gives me motivation and determination to push hard and keep up with these guys. So as long as everyone around me is doing something that's really quality, then I'm like confident that I'm nice with it, because if I can keep up with these guys and they keep me around, then I'm doing my thing. It's the right way to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's dope and also very modest, because both of y'all are incredibly talented artists. Crews, though, are so important to the form. The people that you come up with and the people that you paint with, even going into the field, given the criminal nature of, or how the form is criminalized, a lot of times you go out with people as a form of not only artistic community but also as a way to remain safe. So who are the crews that you've been a part of, and I kind of want to move towards the crews you're a part of now, and just see how those communities have played an important part of your lives.
I always had this thing with crews. I just thought crews were dope. I thought it was something you kind of had to be a part of. At a young age, I met someone that kind of suggested bringing me towards like the group they were. And when I asked another artist about that, they were like, yeah, you could do that and follow someone else's path, or you can just kind of start your own crew and figure it out. I was like, what? How do you start your own crew? I was stoked on that. So we, from the start, me and like a couple buddies that I was with, we always had like our name and then a group that we would go by, and I love it. It's not like a safety net or anything, but it's always more fun with your friends, as I just said. So the crews are really, really cool. I've got crews that I'm in that are very local and mean a lot to me. All my crews mean a lot to me. I've been in for years, almost all of them, and if it's something that's new, it's something that's special. I don't just crew hop or get down with things just to get down with it. It's got to really have a purpose to it, or just totally be something ignorant to have fun with.
And what are the crews that you're a part of?
I paint for the OHB crew, DE, NSH, FYMs, You See It, ABKs, Yardbird, Chain Crew.
What do you get out of being part of so many crews?
These are just friends and family to me. I don't think I would be anywhere without all of those crews and what they've got, what they mean to me, the people that are in it. So it's my family.
Yeah, that's dope. And Merlot?
I totally agree that crews are more like friends and family, and a way to bond and kind of paint with each other and be one. I've never been a part of a lot of crews, because I feel like it should be very close family type things. So I used to be a part of Few and Far, which was an all female collective.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool experience. We traveled to so many places. I painted with a ton of girls and met so many people. And that opened up a lot of opportunities for me. But it just wasn't the right crew for me, so I ended up leaving that crew. Still love all the girls on it, though, and still keep in contact.
They're West Coast based, or is that?
They're all over, but the main bulk of them were the West Coast, and the main reason I joined was Hops and Angel 179 in Seattle. They were both a part of it before me, and I wanted to be part of that because they were like my best friends at the time, so.
That's maybe where I first saw you, when they reposted, pieces that you had done.
Yeah.
And, so I first came to know your work through that.
And they're really cool. They do some really cool events and charity things, which is awesome. And then now I'm part of UCIA and OHB, and the OHB is a very Chicago thing with all of our good close friends here.
What brought you to Chicago in the first place?
Amuse 126.
Okay. Ooh, all right. Well,
y'all met on Instagram.
Well, yeah. So I guess how did you? I mean, because do you guys want to talk about the nature of your relationship?
Yeah, so we actually met at Art Basel in Miami.
So not in Seattle or Chicago.
Right, okay.
So I was at Art Basel, and I actually went to go to one of his art shows.
So you knew of him?
I knew of him.
Yeah, you knew the work?
Yeah. And so me and a bunch of the Few and Far girls wanted to go to the art show, and we went, and I didn't see him there, but we saw the art, and then we left and went to some bar after, and him and his friends ended up going to that bar a little bit later, and that's where we met.
It was just kind of happened.
Did you know of Merlot's work prior to meeting her?
I did. I was familiar with her work, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't know. It was just kind of this chain reaction of things that brought us together without even us meeting yet. And then when we met, there was something there that we both were we gravitated towards it. We didn't know what to do.
We left Miami and we talked for months on the phone
we painted together a little bit in Miami, and then she went back to Seattle and I went to Chicago with two completely different lives. And over a course of a year or so, it made sense that we should be in the same place and not only building on ourselves, but building our art together. And
very randomly, I had a job opportunity come out in Chicago, and so it just made sense for me to move out here. It was the perfect timing.
Great,
luck's been on our side.
Yeah, well, that's really good. Of course, you guys now paint often together. So, what is that process of collaborating in every way possible? I mean, as you know. Partners in different senses of the word, and then, you know, your artistic practice coming together in that way.
We figured out very early on that we are two completely different artists, and with taking a while to respect that and understand how to still function as two very individual artists, we've learned how to build and make it something that can be done together, that is shared, but we still function very individually as needed, but together we have the resources of two amazing artists.
And we've actually recently came together, and we call ourselves the Alphabet Monsters when we actually do work on murals together and do some more collaborative stuff, but we still kind of like to have our own individuality as well, so we kind of have ourselves and then our Alphabet Monsters.
And is that, because I've seen that when you've done pieces together, is that just the two of you, or are other people involved in that, I guess, new crew, or is that just
you? No, Alphabet Monsters is something strictly between Merlot and I.
That's dope.
A.M. Amuse and Merlot.
That's really cold.
Cute.
Well, I can't, you know, there's a lot of things that I want to ask before I kind of go into, because at this point, I mean, you guys are, you know, touring the country, the world, people are, you know, brands and, you know, will get you out on the road. And I want to talk about some of those adventures. But even prior to that, of course, given the nature of what you do, you know, the form is criminalized in Chicago and around the country. And so I wonder about interactions with the police state and the, you know, how they've criminalized the art that you all make. What has that experience been in your lives?
I've been dabbling with trouble for much longer, and I perfected what I thought was the right way to approach it, or what was worth sacrificing and willing to either be arrested for or hurt myself over or something. And so the two of us, obviously as a guy and girl in a relationship, there's a trusting that has to be there. It's a little less safe as opposed to two guys, but being out late at night painting or but her and I have been able to develop and build something that is just very organic and doesn't seem out of place if we were to be out late at night or whatever it is. We both know what we're willing to endure or put ourselves through, and with that being agreed upon and understood, we work. We're a good team.
We have fun. But yeah, it's a little, it's to our advantage a little bit, me being a girl and us being a couple kind of being out there, because it's a little confusing. And I think it's a little,
the more obvious you are, the less suspicious you look.
Exactly. Nice. Have you all had to, duck the authorities together?
Yeah, we've been through quite a few experiences, from customs experiences to local police, all sorts of different
things. We've been arrested together, but we're good at kind of what we do, and we're good at talking, and I think that we've kind of worked our way out of certain situations.
I feel like some our writers probably move away from, you know, doing, or I guess more illegal painting.
We don't.
Right. Well, why do you still choose to, and not just work in gallery spaces or work off commission or whatever?
Because we have fun. We travel like crazy, and I think the whole purpose of doing graffiti is to have fun, and that has kind of nothing to do with our careers or studio work or any of it. The graffiti is the kid that lives inside of us, and as long as we're moving and grooving, we're going to continue to like let that little kid live inside.
Yeah, we definitely live in the moment for wherever we're at. And so if we're with a bunch of friends and they want to go out, and then that's probably what we're going to do. But we also love kind of being creative in our own space as well.
So it's interesting, because there are essentially then, at least in my mind, three ways that you practice your art. One is the illegal space. The second is the permission space, which you guys have been getting a lot of commissions for. I've seen both on live and direct, but also on the gram, and then also the studio space. And I'm hoping maybe you could talk about all of those spaces, but also the ways that those spaces might inform each of all of those practices.
Well, I guess the legal is like the fun, that's that fun side, so we can't get rid of that. So her and I like exploring abandoned buildings and painting challenging spaces that are very, very organic and not something that we get in these legal experiences, which are large mural walls or very, manicured spots. We can kind of have fun and enjoy ourselves a bit more. So that's why the two of those publicly are very important for us. And the studio is a chance for us to just completely unplug and not have eyes on us creating in the moment, which allows us to figure out new things and experiment. And
that's probably my favorite thing about the studio space, is that a lot of times I don't want to test too many things when I'm out painting a wall or anything. So having that studio space to be like, I have this idea, but I need to see if I like it first and to test it out there, I think that works in our favor.
And you guys were saying that you have a studio space together.
Yep.
Do you guys paint at the same time? How does that work? I mean, does somebody have to leave the room, or how does that...
Look at me.
Right. We paint with these backs to one another, or what goes
on?
Yeah,
there's a room divider. We try to... We're one thing, and we're also two individuals. So there's times I'm down there and working through the night or during the day. And
I have a 9-to-5 job. So when I'm at work, he might be down in the studio kind of playing around with some stuff, or when I'm sleeping at night.
But we definitely have space to work together. Whether it's something collaboratively or individually, there's breathing room.
Does your 9-to-5 job know who you are?
Yes, only recently. So I'm an art director and designer, and recently, as in 2 years ago, they found out that this is kind of what I do, based on a coworker that's a friend of mine.
A wanted poster hanging out front.
That too.
Your coworker's a snitch is what you're trying to say.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
Okay.
But it actually worked out in my favor because now on top of kind of doing the design day to day, every few months they actually fly me out to different places to do some live painting for them. So it kind of now works and it's a fun opportunity and they really embrace kind of what I do outside of work now.
That's really cool.
I really flaunt what I do amongst my friends, family. Like, there's no denying who or what I am. And Mary lived a very Superman-type life, doing it, you know, between work and home. And
most of my family don't even know I'm an artist, right?
Even now?
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
That she's even an artist.
Right. So they think you have the gig.
They think
you
moved I have to a Chicago. Design job, and that's it.
That's it. Yeah. Wow.
But I've always been very to myself, and with family, with whatever it is, with work. I've always been very to myself.
Are you going to let them see the S on your chest at some point, or is there going to be a big reveal?
What it's an M.
An M, right? The M on your chest. Yeah.
I don't think there'll be a reveal. I mean, I think if they find out, then that's on them. I don't think I'm ever going to just like. My sister knows, and that's who I'll probably talk to. And if for some reason she spills it, that's fine. But I think it's just like it's almost too late to finally be like, oh, and I've been doing this for the past 10 years.
But they don't. Do they know about Muse?
They know.
They know that I'm a nice guy.
They know he's an artist and that he paints murals for a living.
So, you know, one of the things I've noticed, and I hope you all can speak to this, is kind of what happened with skateboarding in the 90s, I feel like is happening with, you know, graffiti, street art now, where companies are beginning to, you know, fund the practice and get, you know, spokespersons for various brands. And so if you can speak, because I think that's part of the ways that you all also will get around, because there'll be various companies who are attracted to the work that you do and want you to, you know, move about on their behalf. How does that work out, and what's your experience like?
I came from that skateboarding culture, so I super vibed on that and thought it was, man, that was something cool. So when I started getting into graffiti and realized there was a pecking order to it, and then when kind of more of a fancy brand spray paint company came and was introduced, Chicago's never, you know, since 94 we've had the spray paint ban, so getting spray paint in Chicago was always something hard to do. When it became easier to get my hands on a more like craft brand spray paint, that changed things. Seeing a company like that supporting other artists, and there was like same kind of skateboard look to it. Whoa, you can kind of be like a famous graffiti writer. That was the goal. So I pushed really hard to like climb and figure that out and meet people and paint and perfect what I was doing to get to those places in a game that's totally not structured like skateboarding or anything. It's completely lawless, run by degenerates and
right. So how does that
in friend circles and things like that? So it's not what it looks like, and it took a long time. Even when we kind of thought we were there, to be like, there is no there. It's a kind of a grass is always greener on the other side. So as we've gotten to a cool place with it, there's still a lot of like bullshit.
Of course. There was a period in Chicago, I don't know if this is 10 years ago, 7 years ago, but where you know, I saw your work everywhere. You know, you couldn't turn a corner without seeing you. And then I felt like that's when the brand soon after started to take note. Was that a strategy in part, or were you just out here doing the work?
My focus was like, look at me, and that was a very illegal approach to what I was doing, because I didn't have the time, that the supplies, the resources to paint something much more more quality or something of that. I got myself in a bunch of legal trouble, and that slammed the brakes on everything. I wasn't able to travel. I wasn't able to just live so carelessly and recklessly, and it made me have to migrate to these mural walls and work really hard, and it was the only thing that could really pass the time for me in between court dates. and that's the only thing that like kept me going. I knew if I gave this up, I'm stuck in a weird spot. So I had to just push, and because I couldn't kind of prove myself illegally on the streets, I had to really prove myself to people that don't pay as much attention. This is what, you know, the permission wall thing by most graffiti writers. Graffiti writers are who I aim to be acknowledged by, and painting things like these permission and mural walls don't get you much acknowledgement from a lot of these guys. So I had to really push hard to like prove that I was sticking to my roots and doing this for purpose.
Well, there's a tension, right, in the graffiti community between what is illegal and what's permissive. So how do you all, I mean, how do you, in your mind, in your practice, how do you wrestle with something like that?
It's an oversaturated shark tank at this point. So I've stopped kind of caring as far as, you know, what we're doing. Now it's as clear as ever to, like, just trust myself and keep pushing that. And that's always what I've done. But the more I, like, searched for others' recognition and all the way all that worked, it just got us. I found myself spinning in circles. And when I trusted myself and my own sight, that's what I found works best.
How about you, Merlot? How do you deal with any of that tension, or maybe you don't?
I don't as much. I totally agree with everything Amiz was saying, and I think we like doing both of it, the illegal and the legal side of it, mainly because the legal side you get a lot more time to focus on being creative and trying new things and spending a very long time at a wall. And so, yeah, we like both aspects of it.
And what are some of the brands that you guys have worked with or work with, had the opportunity to work with?
I'm currently sponsored by Ironlac. So this is only recent. It's only for the last year.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. Yeah. And they're amazing. It's like a family, and there's some really cool people involved in kind of what they're doing. So I had this awesome opportunity to be a part of it.
Could you explain, you know, what they are, and just in case the listener doesn't know?
Ironlac is an aerosol spray paint company based in Australia. And they not only do spray paint, but they do markers and ink and acrylic and pencils. They do everything. They're just overall art supplies.
Right. Did you just come out with your own markers or something like that, or is that?
No.
Okay. All right.
TBD.
Okay. All right. All right. Great. Excellent. And Amuse?
I've worked with a handful of different companies. There's companies that I still have good working relationships with, and I just found that the most important thing to do is you just got to support yourself in it, and that's what I've always relied on the most, is if I need something, I have to get that myself. I can't really rely on a brand to provide with how much I work and paint and keep moving. It's really hard for a lot of these companies to keep up with that. So
it's been very exciting seeing you all, not only in the streets of Chicago, but elsewhere. I was very proud. One of the first times I went to Art Basel and saw your work down there, Amuse. And I know, you've been there as well, you know, over the last few years. It seems like there are cities around the world now that are using graffiti and street art to kind of revive or gentrify neighborhoods. And I wonder, you know, this is something even in this community that we're sitting in now in Logan Square, you know, there have been graffiti writers.
Oversaturated shark tank.
Right, right. So how, you know, where is that in your thought process? And what is that conversation like for you individually, or, you know, as a crew, or, you know, how does that play out in your practice?
I think these mural things are pretty cool. It's something that I definitely do and have a lot of energy towards. Her and I both are extremely selective on that. We don't sign on to these events or add our name to anything without doing enough research and knowing or validating, I guess. When you want our name on a flyer, we have to support that cause, and we want to be a part of that because it's something we believe is like the right thing. There's a lot of these events and mural projects that happen that are just completely done for the wrong reasons. So as graffiti writers and as people that are helping to, in my opinion, shape and push the scene, we try very hard to make sure we make the right choices of who we support and what kind of events we're painting.
And it's definitely worked in our favor, kind of this trend that's been happening and different communities kind of embracing it. So we try to embrace it just as much. And even though you said it's gentrification in some areas, to a point, when we do paint in these areas, even the people in the community, they can somewhat relate to the graffiti, and so they kind of embrace it as well. Like, I've never had a negative voice come up to us because we're painting a mural in a low-income area, because it ultimately is graffiti, and so they understand it.
We're not coming in painting big, silly-looking characters and, you know, things that aren't related to that community. Graffiti's thrived in every community, so it's sticking to that, and there's nothing more iconic than lettering typography, so as we've just found a good way to manicure that, and it works wherever we go.
Where are some of your favorite spaces that you guys have had the opportunity to paint in, either individually or together?
I like abandoned buildings when I'm by myself or with a couple friends, and we just have the day to.
Yeah, those are fun because you can paint like 5 different pieces in a day and just kind of go crazy with it and do whatever you want. And if you don't like one, that's fine. No one has to see it. So those are cool. We've painted in Hong Kong together, and that was a really fun experience. That was one of our first more collaborative, full-scale murals that we've done. And it came out really great, and we loved having that opportunity.
We always find a way whenever, especially in travel, we find a way to do something together that's very unified and something that's clearly us, and then we definitely do things very individual. So it's as long as it's somewhere we haven't been before, that's my next favorite place. We just want to keep going and keep, there's no time to kind of like, oh, I wish this place we could still paint or be there. We just want to keep painting. I want to be painting right now.
How many different countries have you painted in?
I don't know. Good handful. I 2 years into our relationship is when I got my passport back. So, back. So that's when we were able to start traveling. So we only have, for as much as we've done together, we only have about 2 full years of travel under our belt. And that's not, you know, we're in it for the long game.
Maybe like 5.
So we were talking beforehand just about what you all are beginning to figure out in your studio practice. If you can talk about, you know, what that process is and what are some of the ideas that you're most excited about, given that also we're not only do you have the space, but also we're going into winter in the city. And of course, folks are out in, you know, the streets continuously, but what are some of the ideas that you're really excited about in your own individual studio practice currently?
I have something cool brewing with FQ Frank. So him and I have a little show coming up that we're both working on individually and collaboratively in both of our studio spaces. So that's opening the door for some cool creative things. I just like the studio because nobody's paying attention to what we're doing. I can leave things unfinished or in a state of you know, progress that I can't leave it on the street. So being able to do that and come back to things and sit and brew on it as opposed to like, we got to get to the wall and work and get this thing done, has allowed me to find some new things that I don't know if I'm even ready to talk about yet. There's some cool stuff coming though.
Yeah, and while I don't have any shows or anything like that planned, I use the studio as an opportunity for me to just try new things. combining what I do at work, so some of the design and pattern stuff that I do at work, and trying to figure out how to execute that on a canvas, mixing in some of my graffiti experience. So I just like playing around with new ideas in the studio, and then figuring out how I can progress on top of that.
Without having necessarily specific big shows that we're working towards, we both have definitely in the year or so that we've had this studio put a couple shows worth together of art. We have a large body of all sorts of different things that are things that are you're familiar with from both of us, and things that are very different. And it's cool that that wasn't made for a purpose. It's just experimenting and figuring things out. And there's things that have sat for a year and we look forward to showing. There's things that have sat for a year and that are getting covered up right now. And so it's good trial and error space before we really show what we're trying to do with a lot of big things coming up.
It's been a real pleasure seeing your studio work evolve. I mean, just in a short period of time that I've been seeing in various galleries or group shows or Chicago Trueborn or, you know, Gallery F, seeing you all each carry the integrity of what you do in the street to the studio has been a really beautiful thing to see. Not everyone has the same kind of crossover ability in some ways. I think once people get into the studio or in smaller spaces, they do something completely different. And it's nice to see you all be you, but in the variety of spaces that you're painting in.
Well, situations put us in kind of awkward moments sometimes. Some of these gallery shows that we've shown at, we just kind of jump in. We both kind of have a trouble saying no to things. So there's things that we sign in for that we don't necessarily really want to like put all our heart into, and next thing you know you got a show coming up, so you're forced to like crank something out, and we've done that for a long time. It's almost like being on autopilot, I guess. Now that we have the studio space and we can really work and focus and build something, anything we're doing from, you know, last few months forward is there's a lot more thought, a lot more purpose, a lot more understanding as to what we're approaching, as far other than just, you know.
And it really only makes sense if you've been doing something for 10, 20 years. Why wouldn't you take anything that you've learned from that and bring it into this new medium?
I find it that I'm still trying to perfect what I do in a graffiti-wise, that it's really kind of almost conflict I'm having with myself of taking that time and energy and putting it into the studio, because I'm still trying to prove to myself and what I do that there's a lot to go with just painting graffiti. So to try and work and have a studio practice and balance both of that takes a lot. It's
right, I guess, yeah, because did you necessarily even set out to even have a studio practice initially?
We have so much spray paint that we had no choice then to get a space for it. And once we had space just to put that, it just naturally it built itself out. I mean, we have... I find it, especially with the spray paint ban from way back, you have to have the materials to do what you need to do, and you can't do that when you get a phone call for a job and you don't have any of that. Then you have to go buy it. So I've built myself up to be very self-sufficient, to where I don't need to rely on something, or I could take a job on last minute and be ready. So it's
yeah, I had like a huge job happen a little over a year ago where I needed to paint these large panels, and we had this small office. So me trying to configure how I'm going to paint each of them, and I did it. But that made us realize kind of like how the space is really confining us into doing these small pieces of art. And so once we got the studio space, everything got bigger and we were able to use a ton of different materials and not really think about it as much.
To use spray paint and paint so big, and then all you have is like, you know, your bedroom with what your bed or your carpet on the floor, and this is your little like studio space to figure it out and start like that. It's crippling to kids trying to figure it out, and that's what we've all been through. That's how we grow, and it was just so clear that you have to have that space. You have to have a way to be able to splatter paint and make a mess and detach yourself from living with your art. That's huge for me. Me and my art don't get along too well. We're two very different people.
Yeah, how so?
I don't know. I guess we're the same, but my graffiti has this asshole side that my human side doesn't.
He's a very sweet, sensitive guy.
Hey, there you go. Well, who are artists now? Obviously, one another, but who are other artists that you are, you know, checking for, that you're inspired by, that you're looking towards as a source of, inspiration?
For me, it's just our friends and the people that we surround ourselves with. Like, even the OHB, seeing them try new mediums and do different things and try new techniques. I think surrounding yourself by a group of people that want to strive to improve and do new things is just going to make you feel the same way.
And who are the writers in that crew?
Oh, man, we got a gang of idiots.
Yeah.
Merlot, Muse 126, Stuck, Yano, Fonte, FQ, Adams, Oil Rig, Siege, Easy Money, Haze, Way Up. And if they got forgot, who? And our good friend Burry. Forgot about him. Nice. I'm sorry.
No, there's a lot of names.
Yeah.
Siege is one of my favorites.
Sieges is the truth, man.
Yeah, so, incredible writer.
I knew that from a very young age, and him and I have had a very cool, long-lasting friendship, some brotherhood shit between us. And I had to. I was like, dude, I need you on the squad, man, for sure.
Where can people find you all on the internets?
You can find me on Instagram. It's at Merlotism, Merlotism.
Instagram at amuse, A-M-U-S-E, .126, and my website, 126create.com.
And people with inquiries about permission walls, about projects, they can feel free to...
Yeah,
we keep our emails on our Instagram. It comes directly to us, so...
And there's also the Alphabet Monsters.
Right. Yeah. What can the public look forward to in 2019 from the Alphabet Monsters and also y'all individually?
Bigger, better, less relied on by others. We're hogging space next year. So
a lot of blue and white with the Alphabet Monsters.
Yeah, we've got some cool collaborative things coming up and
Duke Blue Devil jerseys, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's coming.
That'd be dope. Well, y'all, make some noise for Merlot and Amuse one time. We want to thank so many people, Tara.
You want to thank them again?
Always. I want to thank Stolen Spirits, our sponsor. I want to thank WGN Radio. I want to thank DJ Cashera, Ernie at WGN Radio. I want to thank Max for building out the corner store. Certainly want to thank Pop-Up Emporium and the Emporium staff for making our time here this weekend really lovely. And all of you for listening and for also being here live and direct to help us celebrate the year anniversary of our podcast, The Corner Store. Thanks for coming, Amuse Merlot. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
See you all soon. Thank you. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cashera.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.